Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, somebody from the left and from the right, two very smart, very articulate spokespeople for their side, debating for the first time. And the big takeaway was sort of how much they liked each other and agreed on, which was not what I expected. We're talking about Hassan Piker, who used to be the youngest of the Young Turks. He recently left there. He's on Twitch every day at twitch.tv/Hassanabi. John Cobalt of KFI AM 640s, the John and Ken show. He's been on that show for decades. He's one of the most popular radio hosts in the history of Los Angeles, more on the conservative side, Trump supporter. Hassan, Bernie supporter. Both pretty anti-establishment for different reasons, and both with different takes on the government itself. I thought it'd be interesting to see the two of them, different perspectives together, and it was. So we talk about impeachment. We talk about Bernie Sanders. We talk about Michael Bloomberg. We talk about healthcare and homelessness and Medicare for All, a big issue for him. I even talked about the Oscars and the Super Bowl. We talked for a long time, and I think the podcast is a great place to sort of give the full unedited conversation. So here is the full talk between Hassan Piker and John Cobalt. With the issue of impeachment, John, we've now heard hour after hour after hour of the Democrats' case. Were you moved by any of it?
I only heard minute after minute after minute of the case. It's really boring. It is hard to watch. You know the story. I think most people, if they care, and there's a lot who don't, understand the basic charge against him. I think it's presented in such a hysterical, over-the-top, overheated manner that after a while, I just start laughing. When I see Adam Schiff standing there with his eyes bugging out and waving his arms, I'm laughing now because it's just the whole thing is so futile because they're never going to remove him through that process.
But is the substance of what he's saying funny?
I don't know. I don't really consider. I'm not all that interested in the impeachment stuff either. I think that the Democrats absolutely flubbed it by leaving a lot of articles of impeachment on the table, not talking about the violation of emoluments clause, not talking about the potential campaign finance violations, not talking about obstruction of justice in regards to even James Comey. These are plenty of other issues that Democrats have been screaming about from the top of their lungs for the past couple of years since Donald Trump became the president. And for them to outright refuse to even bring that up in impeachment, I think, is leaving a lot of corruption and a lot of evidence on the table. So I was already frustrated to begin with. And, I mean, I don't really care. I don't care about the 17th Ukrainian person whose name I have to now recognize and memorize. The reality is Trump is flagrantly corrupt. He's embarrassing. He's not very good at hiding his corruption. Most American administrations have been corrupt, maybe not to the same extent as Trump, but in a similar extent. But the difference here is that Trump's corruption has gotten to a point where the Democrats had to do something about it. And Nancy Pelosi was virtually bullied into doing something about it.
Are you concerned, though, about the actual substance of what they're saying, which is essentially that the president withheld aid from Ukraine in order to put pressure on the Biden campaign and try to tip the scales in his favor? Is that concerning to you as a precedent?
I'm assuming this has gone on before. I don't have any illusions about all the other presidents from both parties over the years. I can't imagine what kind of dark deals have been going on. I mean, we've been involved in a lot of bad stuff around the world for many generations.
But does secretly, that make it okay, though?
It doesn't make it okay, but this doesn't seem the one to plant the flag on to me. It's just, plus, you know, Hunter Biden was up to a lot of no good there in Ukraine. OK, the part of the problem the Democrats have is there is an issue there. Joe and Hunter Biden were in the Ukraine and Hunter leaves with millions of dollars. So it's hard to say that Trump is 100% wrong in raising the issue with the Ukrainian president. I don't think Joe and Hunter Biden should have special protection to do this sort of thing simply because Joe is running for president.
I don't disagree on that at all. I think that that is old school corruption, which is precisely why I said previous administrations have also engaged in that regular nepotism and regular kind of corruption. Trump is certainly doing the almost identical thing with his children, by the way, currently, and his son-in-law and his own daughter. So There's that element to it as well. But it's very obvious that this wasn't a move established exclusively to figure out what was going on with Burisma or corruption in Ukraine. It was a political move to investigate their opponent. And you're honest. You know that as well. You're saying that other presidents have probably done similar things. We don't necessarily have evidence for that. Right. I would say that illegally going into Iraq is probably way worse. I mean, not probably, it's infinitely worse. The trillions and trillions of dollars that we've spent on the war on terror overseas is a much more significant and worse impeachable offense.
Well, I agree with you, because if you're going to impeach a president for something, why not Lyndon Johnson for the Vietnam War and 60,000 U.S. soldiers dead? Why not George Bush for 4,000 U.S. soldiers dead here? Not to mention the thousands of people in Iraq. I mean, what the impeachment is going to be over this? This is what you pull out the big weapon for?
Trump has done that too, though. Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, he has extended. So here's the thing. It's obvious that Trump is a populist, and he's very good. He's very good at his rhetoric. He's very good at getting people excited and riling up his base, certainly. But what Trump also does very well is play the establishment Republican politics game. He is advocating for the same corporate interests and the same interests of the wealthy that every other Republican candidate would advocate for, deregulating industries and offering tax cuts to the wealthy that will cause significant pain on working class Americans down the line. Sure. He's done all of that, and he's very good at all of that. So he's still appealing to the same kind of corrupt interest that any Democrat or any Republican president would appeal to.
Let's talk, as this trial is underway, the senators are there, including Bernie Sanders, who's running for president and spending much of his time now in the Senate instead of on the campaign trail. Doesn't seem to be hurting him. Recent polls show that Bernie Sanders is surging. New poll came out of California this week, shows that he's number one here. Polls in Iowa and New Hampshire show that he's potentially number one or a very strong number two in basically every major poll. This is your guy. I'm sure you got to be feeling good. What do you see as sort of the case for Bernie Sanders? And do you think that this is really going to happen for him?
So I think the American people are angry. And I think Donald Trump did a pretty good job, pretty effective job at channeling that rage, that frustration that Americans rightfully feel. But what did Donald Trump do? He took that anger and he directed it at red herrings like immigration. He directed it at other people who are also suffering, marginalized communities. And he continued on with business as usual politics while increasing the right-wing populist messaging. This is the reason why I think Bernie Sanders is the best possible candidate for Donald Trump to match up against and most likely to defeat him, as the polls are also showing, is because Bernie Sanders is actually a left-wing populist. Bernie Sanders is actually advocating for the interests of the American working class. And he has a track record. He has a 40-year career and an activism and experience in activism before that, where he has advocated for civil rights. He's advocated for equality. He's advocated for LGBT rights. And most importantly, he's advocated for stronger unions in this country, which is something that Republicans and Democrats both pay lip service to, but don't necessarily follow through on.
Your take on Bernie?
Union membership, it's 10% of the nation.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, and they're all going to vote. They've all voted mostly Democrat anyway up until Trump. And Trump has made it clear he's made an emotional bond with them. He's going to hold on to a lot of the union members, especially in the Midwest manufacturing states that he made 4 years ago. It's going to be hard to pull them away from Trump.
But why? Because of his opinion on NAFTA, right?
Right.
His clear take on NAFTA. Who was one of the very few members in Congress who advocated against NAFTA, who spearheaded the effort against NAFTA? Bernie Sanders. And that's precisely why he destroyed it in those battleground states against Hillary Clinton and in states where people voted for him in the primaries and then refused
to
vote.
But Trump gets
for either.
To say, I renegotiated NAFTA.
I know, but the
Bernie
USMCA
was talking,
is actually
I
terrible.
Did it. What?
Well, USMCA is actually not all that great, and it's just basically the same kind of trade deal that doesn't really appeal to the it doesn't really factor in the needs of the American working class, doesn't factor the needs of the working class in the countries that it's supposed to
John,
impact.
John, what's your take on Bernie, and do you think Bernie could actually win a general election in swing states?
His wish list, the cost of his wish list is what's going to do him in. I could see clearly he tapped into a lot of what Trump tapped into. That's why he was so powerful in the Democratic election. You had about 12% of Bernie voters didn't vote for Hillary. They voted for Trump. And there's probably even more that you can mine there.
Right.
There's
eight.
What?
It's eight at the national level. 12% is actually the amount of Hillary Clinton supporters that voted for John McCain.
Well, all right. Okay. I read something different yesterday.
No, it's fine.
All right.
Eight is still significant.
But the point is, there is some overlap there.
Right.
They were on the same issue. The trade issue was disastrous for middle America. It was terrible for it. Okay. They're on the same when it comes to getting out of most of the wars in the Middle East. Trump was also much stronger in immigration. That is a very, very popular topic among people.
Of course, one of the things that made news this week was Hillary Clinton's comments about Bernie Sanders. We want to put those up on the screen. Basically, what she said was, nobody likes him. Nobody wants to work with him. He got nothing done. He was a career politician. It's all just baloney, and I feel so bad that people got sucked into it. Okay, clearly there are people that like Bernie Sanders, and I tweeted out that I like Bernie Sanders and have enjoyed working with him. But does she have a point, though, about the idea that, look, he's been in Washington a long time, and he really hasn't accomplished much of these things, whereas some of these other senators maybe get more done in terms of working in the system as it is?
I, by coincidence, watched a Bernie Sanders interview from 1981. He'd just been elected Burlington, Vermont mayor, and he was on the Today Show. He was exactly the same guy. Same voice, same cadence, same issues.
Same haircut.
He even looked the same.
Yeah, he looked the same.
He looks like he's 78 since 1990.
Right.
I agree with that.
That's right. His hair was already gray.
Yeah.
And you stop and you think, it's like this guy has had a good shtick for 40 years. It's like a comedian who had a good routine and could go out on all the variety shows and do the same. But, yeah, what has he done? He's talked a lot, and he's resonated with people. But, yeah, when he got to the Senate, what is the big Bernie Sanders law that changed people's lives?
Would you like me to elaborate on this?
Go ahead.
Because this is a
That's
common misconception
here.
Created by the Hillary campaign and created by establishment Democrats who are, of course, as you are seeing now more than ever, have a significant anti-Bernie bias. Bernie Sanders is considered the amendment king. He has dealt with numerous bipartisan legislation. He was spearheading the efforts for protecting veterans' aid. And not only that, but even after his popularity hit terminal velocity or peak velocity in the aftermath of the 2016 presidential race, what did he do? He got Amazon, a global giant, to raise their minimum wage to $15 an hour. He advocated for Medicare for all since the 90s. And finally, once people started paying attention to what he was saying on the national stage, he got Medicare for all to be the litmus test for Democrats. This is something unheard of previously. He was so effective at moving the Overton window closer to where the left should be in such a short period of time that it is always shocking to me whenever people say Bernie Sanders is not effective. I would say he's the most effective.
What do you say to that?
He's, moving a conversation is different than changing the law and coming up with a new Medicare system.
Well, that's
system.
Why I mentioned the $15 minimum wage
right.
thing.
Right, I understand. I'll grant you that. The thing is, most people, when they're told the details of Medicare for All, don't want it. They think Medicare for All means people who are uninsured now, which is, what, 10%, 12% of the country, they'll get insurance.
Right.
Then they find out, oh, no, you're losing your private insurance, and it's getting replaced. The support for that goes way down.
Let's save that for a little later in the show, because we're going to do a whole segment about Medicare for All. But let's just wrapping up things on Bernie. One of the fights that we had this week, Elizabeth Warren versus Bernie Sanders, longtime allies. We've seen this conflict between the two of them. There was this leak about Bernie Sanders saying that she doesn't believe a woman could be president. There was this conflict on stage between the two of them. As a Bernie bro yourself.
Yes.
There's been some conversation about whether Bernie bros are sort of turning against Elizabeth Warren. She's no longer their number two. What's your sort of insight into that?
I mean, no political fandom is a monolith, obviously.
Right.
There were certainly a lot of fans of Elizabeth Warren in the Bernie constituency, and now there are going to be less and less of them. The reason for this is not because Elizabeth Warren is incapable of becoming president by virtue of her womanhood, but because of the way that she dealt with the obvious smear campaign that she may or may not have leaked personally, or her campaign may or may not have leaked. But even if she didn't have a hand in leaking this to CNN conveniently right before the CNN debate was held the night after. Right. And right as she was dipping in the polls and Bernie Sanders was surging, the way she dealt with it in the next 48 hours was disastrous. I've said this many times before. I think Elizabeth Warren is a strong advocate for consumer protection. She has a great track record on that issue. She has a good track record of standing up against Wall Street. She's an effective institutional politician. She's very good at legislation, but she is disastrous at campaigning, and it shows. She's beholden to whatever her consultants tell her, and unfortunately, I think there are a lot of Kamala Harris staffers or staffers from previous establishment Democratic campaigns that were working with her.
Is Warren a stronger candidate than Bernie?
No.
Yeah.
No, I think Bernie's a stronger candidate. You know, it wasn't a credible charge that she leveled against him. Nobody really believed that.
Yeah. One other thing happening recently, Mike Bloomberg, who is running in California, doing his sort of own thing, spending all hundreds of millions of dollars on ads, going to spend $10 million on a Super Bowl ad. We see him inching up in the polls recently. Do you think he's got a shot? What do you make of the Bloomberg thing?
I suppose if Joe Biden passed out one day in the middle of a speech, yeah, he might have a shot. He's kind of a safety valve for in case Joe Biden goes down for some reason. I don't think just running commercials will ever get you the presidency. Yeah. People really want a lot more than that. And he has to get into the competition. He has to get involved in the debates. He has to get interviewed by some contentious reporters.
Yeah, something tells me he's not your favorite.
No, I think that the guy most known for banning fountain drinks and sodas is somehow not going to do great in Heartland America. But beyond that, I think that there is something deeply broken in American politics if a billionaire can just decide to become president one day and very openly buy ads to the tune of $90 million in ad spend commitments in the Super Tuesday primaries.
More than that already.
Yeah, and even more than that already, and actually get somewhere with that. Yeah. I mean, that is deeply frustrating to someone like myself who thinks that politicians should be advocating for the best interests of the working class.
Right.
And here we are very effectively being duped by a billionaire who decided, I'm going to be president now.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. Up next here on The Issue is the big issue of homelessness. Once again, front and center. Could the federal government be offering some relief? Should they? Stay with us. More right after this. This week, the annual homeless count was underway throughout many California communities, trying to figure out how many people are actually living on the streets. Last year, we saw an increase in most places. Meanwhile, this week, LA Mayor Eric Garcetti, Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf, and others meeting with federal leaders in Washington, hoping to get the Trump administration more involved in helping California on this issue. Back with our panel, Hassan Piker on the left, John Cobalt on the right. John, this is the big animating issue for many of your listeners on KFI.
Virtually every single listener.
Okay. Homelessness. Should the federal government get more involved? And if so, what do you want to see him do?
Yes, only because Garcetti and Newsom and the rest of them are disasters. Total failures on this. There's nothing good to be said about all the methods they've used the last few years. So it's emergency time. It's pretend this is a hurricane, a tornado, an earthquake. You send in the federal government, FEMA, every possible agency that has jurisdiction and money, and you set up instant camps to take the homeless to and start giving them treatment immediately. I mean, get them off the street because they're dying, 1,000 a year dying.
Yeah.
They're also injuring and killing people.
Right.
There's a lot of insanity going on, and nobody should live like this, not them and not us.
Yeah. Hassan?
I agree with everything you just said. It is. It is a humanitarian crisis. And that's not just me saying that. That's the UN reporters that specialize in going into conflict areas and looking at the conditions of refugee camps saying that. As a matter of fact, the latest UN reports suggests that Skid Row conditions are so dire that they don't have access to working sewage facilities. They don't have even porta potties. And it's so bad that it's worse than Syrian refugee camps that the United Nations currently has. So that's what we're dealing with in our own backyard in the wealthiest country on earth and one of the wealthiest states. And it's absolutely disgusting. And yeah, the federal government should do something about it. And you are not incorrect when you stated that Gavin Newsom and California Democrats haven't done enough to deal with this issue, haven't done enough to tackle it head on. One of the biggest problems here is the misinformation going around as far as our lack of understanding of the crisis and the way we deal with it. We think that this is an issue where the police should be dealing with it, when it's in fact just another structural problem that requires solutions from the federal government or requires solutions from the government, i.e., most importantly, offering people shelter immediately as quickly as possible, and also mental health treatment.
So what you're talking about, though, John, has not happened yet. I mean, Garcetti is meeting with Ben Carson and other people tonight.
Don't they know by now what they need to do after all these years?
So why isn't it happening? Why is the president sending out all these tweets?
Why isn't the president sending anything out?
Why isn't the federal government doing what you're suggesting?
Trump wants them to twist in the wind and embarrass them and use California as a talking point in his campaign. Wants to make them beg.
Doesn't that bother you, though, as a Californian and as a Trump supporter? Doesn't that bother
you? Yeah, I wish he would just get it on. I don't want to get this issue get caught up in the presidential campaign. I would rather he declare a state of emergency now, this minute, and send in as many people as necessary to help these people and relieve all the just terrible conditions that everyone has to put up with. There's a guy who defecated in front of my wife the other day on San Vicente Boulevard in Brentwood.
So meanwhile, Gavin Newsom announced his plan last week, $1 billion of California taxpayer money to potentially and put out trailers for 50 people.
He also, in his speech, said that basically, anybody who comes to California, we have a moral obligation to take care of, whether they came years ago or last week. And if they continue to come, no matter from where, we're here to help. That was the gist of what he said. And my head almost popped off. It's like you're sending out a beacon. Come here, we'll take care of you. Well, I didn't sign up for this to finance everybody's problem in all 50 states.
Yeah. Hassan, you said you're frustrated with some of what the local leaders are doing. What would you like to be seen done on a local and state level?
I think that national rent control is something that's going to be heavily contested, but it's an important part of Bernie Sanders' housing policy. And I think we need to implement something that decommoditizes housing as best as possible and as quickly as possible, considering the fact that many people are now renting and not buying homes. Another issue is vacancy. I mean, there is Moms for Housing is an ongoing activist organization right now in Oakland where moms and their children are basically taking over squatting in vacant buildings, and they're sending militarized police to stop them and evict them. Obviously, it's terrible. But one thing that they point out to all the time is the fact that there is a 4-to-1 ratio of vacant houses to homeless people in the state of Oakland area, in the greater San Francisco metropolitan area alone. And that number is alarming because, yeah, I understand the profits of landlords are very important, and there are plenty of private equity interests involved in that situation that are spending all the money they can against Prop 10 and all the money they can against rent control initiatives. But people are suffering, as you also correctly pointed out. So what we're doing thus far hasn't worked out, and we need to offer shelter.
What would you like to be seen done on the state and local level?
There is a law, which I didn't even know existed till I watched one of your newscasts.
Thank you very much.
The PLS law, passed in 1967. Yeah. And it severely restricted the right of anybody to take a severely mentally ill person or a drug addict or an alcoholic and put him into treatment.
Right.
Before 1967, you could do that. It was obvious, right? Some of the situations we've all seen. That law has to be dramatically rewritten. We have to be able to force these people into treatment, whether they want it or not, because look at that poor woman in Venice who drank a bottle of vodka and then got raped in broad daylight. Yeah. I mean, you can't have that.
Yeah, a shout out to our investigative reporter, Bill Malusian, here at Fox 11 for doing that story.
So I do want to quickly point something out here. The leading cause of homelessness is not necessarily mental disabilities. It's not actually mental issues. And this is something that's like very popular. Everyone always says this. And there are certainly a lot of mental issues at play. Mental health is incredibly important. That's why I support Medicare for All. But the leading cause is still rent. It's still how expensive it is to find shelter in a marketplace like California, in Los Angeles specifically, too, in San Francisco. That's what's leading young people who already have jobs to homelessness.
Right.
And then they suffer even further after that because shelter is a human right.
All right, we're going to have to take a pause. You guys have agreed on a lot so far, but one area I know you disagree on is the issue of Medicare for all. So we're going to get into that debate coming up next. But before we do that, we want to ask you, what do you think about the homeless issue? What do you want to see be done on that issue? Send us an email. Go to our website. Our website, by the way, is theissueisshow.com. You can send your comments to theissueis@foxtv.com. Also, we've got a podcast. All of our shows are in podcast form, digital extras, including an in-depth conversation with Hassan Piker. Search for The Issue Is wherever you stream. We'll be right back. Should we get rid of all private insurance and have it replaced by a public option? That issue has been the most consistent and most contentious in every Democratic debate so far. It really gets to the larger question about the government's role in our society. So let's get into some of that with our two panelists who have very different views on this particular issue. Hassan Piker on the left, streaming at Twitch, and John Kobal from KFI on the right. Hassan, this is your issue. This is your big thing, Medicare for all. In brief, why do we need it?
I mean, American people are suffering. We pay twice as much as any other nation on average, and we get worse healthcare outcomes. The healthcare industry is a total scam. It's a mediator that does not need to exist at this in this day and age. And I think it's time that we bring America into the 21st century. I'm shocked that this is even up for debate at this point, where we look at all of these other nations and they are capable of doing this. Developing nations that are capable of offering better health care to everyone when we pay more and we can't even have, we still have the most medical bankruptcies.
John?
I don't trust the U.S. government to run that big an industry. I don't want them further involved in my life when it gets down to whatever illnesses me and my family have and who we're going to go to and what our decisions are going to be. I simply don't trust them. I don't see the agency that makes me believe I should have confidence in any level of government. You look at anything from locally, the LA school system, to the freeways, which are crumbling, to the DMV, to any number
about
of federal agencies.
About the military?
The military does a pretty good job when they're told to go out and bomb, yeah. But I don't think the military minds are going to be running whatever health agency there is. And then I don't really trust half the administrations, maybe 80% of the administrations that are going to take over and run. Everyone's always going to add new rules, new regulations, new symptom, and it's always going to cost a lot more. Yes, it's expensive here. God knows what it's going to be when it comes to taxation.
Well, yeah. There is actually, there are studies for that. Specifically, the Mercatus group did a study on this. They're Koch-funded think tank, and they wanted to find this astronomical number of what Medicare for All would cost. And the study found that it would cost around $32 trillion in the next 10 years. And everyone thought, wow, what an insane number. What a shocking number that is. And then we found out that the actual number it would cost currently, if we kept things as is under the Affordable Care Act, it would cost Americans $34 trillion. So Medicare for All, contrary to popular opinion, actually cuts cost for American people. We pay so much money, $500 on average out of our income to healthcare premiums already, even if we're employed. And then we still don't get coverage, usually, because
but
insurance...
But I want to go when I want, yeah, to who I want.
That's fine.
To a moment's notice. And that's not the way it turns out. That doesn't happen in Canada or in England.
It does.
John's point, though, which is the point that a lot of people agree with, which is this idea that the government doesn't run anything particularly well, so why should I gamble on my health?
Look at the VA healthcare program.
Well, we can get to that in a second. But you mentioned the military, and I think that that's a great analogy. Why is the military run so efficiently? Not because they're dealing death around the world. That's still a uniquely complicated thing to do. The reason why the military is well-oiled is because it's well-funded. And that's the reality. A lot of the social programs that you just mentioned with so much disdain are the way they are right now in a state of disrepair because of a lack of funding, because of neoliberal reforms perpetrated by not only the Republican Party, but the Democratic Party as well, like charter schools that took a tremendous amount of funding from public schools that needed it. So yes, this is not an issue about the government not being trustworthy. This is an issue about not funding these social programs that Americans
desperately
need.
But when we give the government money, like in L.A., they got another $1.3 billion in homeless money last year. What happened? The problem got worse.
It's a big issue.
It's a big issue, but just giving them extra billions all the time, you have to see progress. You have to see proof that these agencies are competent and deliver. Some of this stuff seems very theoretical to me, based on studies and philosophy and ideology. It's like, this is the way the world should work. Well, let's look at the way the world really works.
Well, we don't even have to have a conversation about studies. Even though studies do show, studies do favor my side of the political equation here. But even if we're not looking at studies and you want to talk about pragmatic solutions, or if you want to talk about what works and what doesn't work, I mean, it's obvious that private insurance doesn't work. I mean, look at what's happening right now in America with millions of people who are underinsured, even though they're paying out of pocket for, even though they're paying an exorbitant amount for health care that they may or may not need down the line.
And another point, John, I mean, in terms of looking at how it actually works, you know, we have this system in place all over the world. I mean, almost every industrialized country has a form of Medicare for all, with the exception of America.
You do get into rationing situations in these countries. You have a lot less control. You do have to wait, especially if you have serious problems. So if you need scans and surgeries, you know, there are a lot of Canadians that come to the U.S. to bypass all the bureaucracy up there.
So here's the situation. We also do that. We also ration. We ration for the wealthy. We ration for those who can pay in America. And that, I think, is a much worse system than anything else. And the reality of wait times is that, with the exception of Canada, every other country actually has more doctors per capita, and they have either around the same times, around the same waiting times as America currently has, or less or shorter waiting times. What you're referencing usually is...
I don't know how you get people to trust. Your side has a trust problem, because when you present to most people the idea of the government taking over anything, the answer is, I don't believe you.
Yeah,
America is deeply distrustful. Prove this to me. Yeah, it is. And we've got good reason to be.
Well, not necessarily. I think America, I think you and I will both agree that what was the peak of American industry, right? Moments where either post-World War II or post-Great Depression, where we had a lot of social safety nets implemented, where we had a lot of social cohesion, where Americans were genuinely working on improving and building this nation. And at those times, we had high taxation and there was a trust in government.
Right.
So we need to get back to that. And unfortunately, the reason why we can't get back to that is because both the Democrats and Republicans are more interested in, like I mentioned, neoliberalism, austerity measures that come as a consequence of those tax cuts, and a crippled social safety net that understandably leads to mistrusting the government, because the government is not helping them right now. But that's what the government is supposed to do. There is no other reason for the American government to exist outside of offering at least a base level of material equality for every American citizen.
And there is some rationing going on now, where you maybe don't go get your checkup because your insurance doesn't cover it, or you don't go to the doctor on time because you're worried about that, or your plan is
full
of that.
I know there's plenty of problems with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to weigh.
Right.
And when I think about my particular private insurance setup, we're comfortable with it. You're bringing me the U.S. government's version.
Yes, but you're relatively well off, and that's not the reality for the overwhelming majority of people, and even people like yourself in a long enough timeline. If this unhinged profit motive based health insurance scam continues, you will also not be in a particularly good situation.
Obamacare was going to fix everything.
No, Obamacare was a Heritage Foundation. Obamacare is a Heritage Foundation program, as in it was created in the 90s by the Republicans. It was a market based solution to a socialized medicine problem, and it was first implemented by Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
So Obamacare, in every way, in every sense of the word, is actually a Republican plan implemented by Republicans, but then Republicans got up and stood firmly against Obamacare when Obama advocated for it. That is the one party America reality that we all exist under, that we cannot, for some weird reason, escape from. And No, I think that the ACA didn't go far enough. It was terrible. And it was basically a wealth transfer to a health insurance, like private health insurance.
John, that was the wrong person to bring up.
I hit a tripwire.
Yeah. All right, we're going to have to leave it right there. Interesting debate there. Up next, we try out a brand new game to get to know these guys in a new way. Plus, the one issue they think isn't getting enough attention. We'll wrap up The Issue Is right after this. All right, welcome back to The Issue Is. We have with us Hassan Piker and John Cobalt. We're going to try something new, a new game. This is called The Issue Will Be. So the concept being that there's a lot of big stories happening in the next 2 weeks. We want to get you to give us a prediction of what's going to happen. So we got some of those big events, including the Super Bowl on Fox next week. So to each of you, who's going to win the Super Bowl, Chiefs or 49ers?
Thank you for saying the name of the teams, because I forgot already. 49ers.
Yeah. Chiefs.
Yeah, you're a big Jimmy G guy.
I don't know anything.
Who's going to win the Oscar happening also in a couple weeks? The Best Picture Oscar. John?
Well, I saw 1.5 of the 10 movies. So I'll go for the one I saw, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
I also only saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and nothing else. But I'm going to say Parasite. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm very excited to watch it, and I heard it's really good.
I saw half the Irishman.
I've seen all 10, and I think Parasite's going to win. Iowa caucus, that's something you both study closely. Yeah. Who's going to win the Iowa caucus?
Bernard Sanders.
I think Bernie's going to win, too, yeah.
Wow, how about that?
He's got the last surge, and usually whoever gets the last surge oftentimes wins the Iowa caucus, and most likely the candidacy.
All right, and one other new game we're going to try out, it's called The Issue Should Be. This is stuff that's not being talked enough about in the mainstream media that maybe you want to highlight. So we'll give you like 15, 20 seconds to get on your soapbox. The Issue Should Be. Hassan, we'll start with you.
I mean, I always talk about the same exact issue, which is the capitalist dogma that has destroyed the American mentality and even caused us to have a loss of faith in the American government. But also homelessness. It's a gigantic problem, specifically in America. I mean, specifically in California, where we have 135,000 or 165,000?
150,000.
Yeah, 150,000 as of last count. It's terrible.
John, I think you also probably going to say the capitalist dogma, right?
The capitalist dogma. That doesn't flow out of me as easily as it flows out.
Did he steal yours?
Flows out. You know what? I do think that there has to be more in-depth coverage on the causes of homelessness. I happen to think it's more mental illness and drug and alcohol addiction, just based on the things that I have researched and gotten into. And it doesn't seem that there is like a critical outrage of in the media for all the weird things they get obsessed about. Here you have people dying in the streets, and we can see them dying, and we know why they're dying, and it gets passing coverage with the exception of your newscast and one other in town. But I'd say most of the media glides by it.
Yeah, and we have brought it up every single week here on The Issue Is, because we think it is the most pressing issue in California right now. Gentlemen, thank you very much. That was interesting and fun to watch. A pretty smart and respectful discussion. Our thanks to Hassan and to John. Next week, a very special show from Rancho Mirage. We can't wait to have that, and probably going to be a lot of different podcasts that come out of that experience. And we get much closer and closer to Iowa caucus and actual voting here in California. It's an exciting time. Thanks for listening. I'm Alex Michelson. See you next time.